Hey folks, we're back. It's a goodlifebabe.com episode 86, part 2.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 86, part 2. I got the bad headphones again, bro. Somehow did that.
Why do you keep doing that?
I don't know. It's my fault.
Yeah, it is your fault. Who else's fault could it be?
Where's the other pair? This is not a Goodwill Hunting moment.
Well, maybe because the other pair are on the ground.
It is my fault,
Joel. that's how
the bad ones got busted in the first place. Being on the ground.
Yeah, right. I seem to recall someone asking people not to put them on the ground. That could have been me. I don't know, dude.
Lord, I don't know why we're supposed to blame people in society these days.
Oh, yeah.
So welcome back, everybody. We had a great part one. If you didn't listen to that, Melissa Arujo, chef, Honduran chef here in town. What a lovely personality.
Honduran Sicilian chef.
And talented chef, rising chef in New Orleans.
That's right.
Go check her food out and listen to part one if you haven't already, because some people might skip because they see that we're talking about saying to people like
this. Dude, I am so hungry after talking to her, man. Dude. Like, her descriptions are so vivid and alive.
You can just close your eyes.
I was sitting there, and I'm like, secretly, you know, hoping that we could accelerate the end of the podcast, knowing that I shouldn't feel that way.
Right.
So that I could go and get some food that maybe, you know, might be in the same arena
as what she was talking about. I was literally salivating.
Like that whole, when she was talking about the pulled pork with the lard. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, it's so rich and so decadent.
Yeah.
It was just like ridiculous. Griper, if you're out there listening, man.
Well, that's what we're going to have for MLK Day on Monday. She's going to be serving up.
I hope you're in town, Griper.
That's all I can say. The Monday MLK block party, everybody. We'll see you out there 12 to 4.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Saints.
How can we not?
We have
to. We're in the divisional playoffs.
Yeah, we are. And
doesn't happen that often.
No, I mean, when was the last time we were in the playoffs? 2013, I think.
Yeah, when was the last time we were in the divisional playoffs? Might have been our Super Bowl run.
2011, right? I don't think we went out in the first round in 2011. We went out in the second round in 2011.
Well, it's been too long, folks.
It has been way too long.
So, and look, for me, divisional playoff weekend is like the final four to most people.
No, I'm wrong. We went out in the NFC Championship in 2011.
We did?
Yep. We got defeated by San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, that's right.
Remember?
Yeah, because Pierre got concussed.
God damn.
On an illegal hit.
And we were so sure that we were going to freaking make it.
Oh, we really were.
Yeah. I know.
God damn it, man. Brutal.
Yeah, I think it was the NFC Championship.
That was the worst I've ever felt.
I'll have to go on review, but it was definitely the Niners.
That was the worst I've felt from a sports moment. That might have been divisional round. That might have not been championship.
God damn it, man.
Too bad I don't have a computer in front of me.
It's such a drag. Look, I just feel like I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I think the Saints have got a better chance than, you know, a good one. Hold on, let me think. I think the Saints have a better chance than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams maybe in the playoffs of making, you know, and I'm including the AFC, which rationally doesn't make any sense.
Well, the Saints have like a 7.9% of winning the Super Bowl at this point, and the most favored team, which is either New England or Minnesota, has like a 14.5%.
Yeah, because it's hard for statisticians to get above a certain percentage.
When there's 8 teams left.
When there's 8 teams left, right, exactly. Right. So, like, that's a misleading number when you see it. You know, but look, here's the thing.
But we have, like, a 20% chance of making the Super Bowl.
I just feel like, you know, Case Keenum is, you know, maybe I shouldn't talk about it because of the jinx or whatever, but anyway, I'll talk about it like any pundit would. Case Keenum has never been in the playoffs before. Case Keenum is a guy who's been banned, who was like cut, rehired, thrown around the league as a third string quarterback a lot. He's had a few good games, but let's not get it twisted. All right, the Minnesota Vikings' success this year is wholly predicated on the play of their defense. You know,
yeah, they have a stout defense. They have a great coaching staff on defense.
As much as we can say that,
great secondary and great defensive line.
The Saints, like, if we wouldn't have had Drew Brees during those 7-9, the three seasons that we went 7-9, we would have won three games, maybe
three or four.
Yeah. Three or four in any of those seasons. We would have been a terrible team because our offense played well.
Terrible.
We were one. We were, as most years, one of the best offenses, if not the best, in the league, and. You know, it's a case where the Saints' defense needed to get better, and the Saints' defense has gotten better, and that's the reason why we're where we are.
Eighth best defense in the league, you know, legitimately.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love what's going on with our offense. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we have this amazing running back tandem, and then we showed also when we're up against a stout defense like Carolina that that we can go to the air. That Drew Brees can be the Drew Brees. That Drew Brees has always been.
Well, they put whenever he wants. They put a lot of people in the box to stop the run, and we threw the ball.
And we threw the ball, and we threw it effectively because we have amazingly good. We have one amazingly good wide receiver right now in Michael Thomas.
Right,
and he runs spectacular routes, and he's able to get open. And
we don't have a lot of depth, so we need like this week because their secondary is so good. We need Coleman, Ginn Jr., and Willie Snead all to make a couple catches.
That's right. And we need Ginn to not do any punt or kick returning, for one. That's one thing we need.
We kind of need Ginn to catch the ball and fall down.
Just catch the ball. Unless you're in an open field.
Unless you're running a vertical route.
Yeah, if you're running a vertical route, just go for the end zone.
If you're running a post or even
yeah, just go down to the ground.
Just go ahead and fall down on the ground.
Just go ahead and fall on the ground.
Fall forward, Ted Ginn Jr.
Fall forward, exactly.
And don't move the ball from one arm to the other, Ted Ginn Jr. We know you're listening.
Look, I'm okay with you if you move the ball from one arm to the other if you're running a vertical route and somebody's trying to catch up with you and they're on your right side and so therefore you want the ball to be on your left side. But in a tight, coordinated situation, don't move the ball.
Don't move the ball.
Just don't do it.
Don't make a cutback. You're too slow and tall.
Yeah, you're too slow and tall.
By all means, don't try a 360.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Dude, you're super fast going downfield, man, and we love you for that.
We lose 8 yards every time you do a 360.
All right.
If not the ball. Hey, can I say something about the Jinx and Ted Ginn Jr. in our analysis just now?
Yeah.
I'm not one to think that my words affect the outcome of a game.
Yeah.
Therefore, I can, in the previous
podcast. You say anything.
Y'all gave me shit and y'all knocked on wood and shit because I said something about on MLK Day, I'm going to have a Saints victory hangover and everyone's like, oh!
It's all bullshit.
I don't believe in God. I don't believe in my words. That can affect the outcome. I believe more that there's a likelier chance of Ted Ginn Jr. listening to this podcast and us being in his head for the shit we just talked.
Yeah, that's right.
And us affecting the game in that way.
That's right.
Than me making that crack in the previous episode. Just saying, Ted Ginn Jr., don't let me in your head, bro. But hold on to the ball and don't do a 360.
And look, this is what I want. This is what I want to see. Because like, I'm sorry, it wasn't exactly a walk off sack because there was one more kneel down play, but it's as close.
It was a walk off sack.
It was a walk off sack. All right, that nobody wants to see somebody get hurt, right? But I tell me out there in football fan land. That Onyemata hit on Cam Newton wasn't like the most satisfying thing.
Where he rubbed his he sacked him. He rubbed his not the walk off,
the one before that.
Yeah, he sacked him with his arm. He hit him without hitting.
No, he got hit. He got hit behind the line by the first guy. I don't know if it was Cam
right.
or not. And he was turned around by that. And then he tried to scramble. And before he knew what happened, Onyemata had broken free and crushed him.
But then he also rubbed his crotch on him. And then he kicked him with the cleat
to the
face.
And he kicked him and it made his finger go in the eyeball.
So he got him three ways.
He got him like three fucking ways. And I just want to congratulate Onyemata for that, you know?
Yeah.
And who knows with Cam, again... Because Cam is so hard to understand in a way.
He's an enigma.
I know that people say this, that like nobody is harder. You know, Cam gets more stuff thrown at him than anybody else in the league. And I can see that there's a point with that. I mean, look, I am definitely not on the wagon train of people who are like, Cam Newton's a, You know, he's a terrible quarterback. Like, he had a shitty year.
Yeah, he had some really bad games. He had three or four great games, including the one against us. He played really well against us.
He played really well against us, and you were the one who said that before the game, that you were like, he can have these games where he's like, where he looks like an MVP. You know, it's just that he doesn't do it consistently. I mean, he can.
Even within the game, too.
Even within the game, right. He can have
a great game and do some knucklehead thing that kills his team.
Right, exactly. And like I said,
a little Boogie Cousin-esque.
Like I said before, too, and I didn't like it at the end of the game because I said to you that I was like, if there's 5 minutes left in the game and we have a 2-point, if we're two scores ahead,
right.
Then Cam Newton is just a guy who's going to fall apart on you. He's not going to give you the effort at the end of the game like a Brett Favre or a fucking Warren Moon or a fucking, you know.
He starts pointing fingers.
Steve McNair.
He has a look on his face like.
He turns into Bobby Hebert.
Like he's thinking to himself, why am I down two scores? What's wrong with the universe? What's wrong with my teammates?
Exactly.
Why is this happening to me?
He turns into Bobby Hebert. Bobby Hebert was the worst back in the day for people who can remember. He used to blame all his receivers. He'd start yelling at everybody. Everybody else's fault out here, and then he goes into the fucking playoff game when we were 12-4 and throws four interceptions in the second half. Who made you throw four interceptions in the second half?
When Cam is down,
you did.
Exactly. When Cam is down two scores, he starts getting that look. I mentioned this during the game the other day on Sunday. He gets that look like from the jerk. From them glasses that Steve Martin, the jerk, sold. Reiner with the cross eye.
He gets the jerk look.
He does.
Look,
and with, along with the pouty face.
Yeah.
It's a hybrid look.
There's so much that is, you know, he does the extra kneel down thing.
Yeah.
Before he goes behind the line.
Yeah.
The entire huddle goes away.
Yeah.
And then Cam is still kneeling.
Yeah.
I guess ostensibly to make, for like he's praying to God or something like that.
He pulls a little Tim Tebow on the field.
But look, here's the thing. If you, I will absolutely agree that there is a racial component. Of course there is. There's a racial component to the Cam Newton takedowns. Because there's just a bunch of idiot racists in the United States, you know? And anytime anybody in a prominent position who is black or any other ethnicity than white gets just piled on.
Completely agreed.
By this community of people who start to take it down. Okay.
There's all this coded racism when they start talking about his personality and all that.
True. All that's true. I'll just say this. The silent treatment at the press conference after the game.
Yeah.
He just doesn't do anything to help.
He's an enigmatic, pouty dude. He just is.
He is.
Objectively speaking.
He is.
Look, I can tell you.
That guy that you, who was super talented, who you couldn't stand. When you played team sports, because he knew he was better than everybody else. And when that guy does that to me, everyone else, I know that this is true, everyone else on the team says he's pouting because he's saying that he's better than everyone else on the team.
Right.
And you didn't service me.
Right.
And that's the way it was when you were in junior varsity. And you played stuff. That's the way it was on the playground when you're just playing amateur ball. That's the way that it is, man. When you have a guy like that.
Let me ask you this: if he were white,
you can't behave like.
If he were white and he did that little prayer thing on the field, I think he'd catch a lot more shit than he does. Because I've never heard anybody give him shit. Like we tore fucking Tim Tebow a new asshole, man, for his praying on the sideline. It's different. I get it. And as an atheist, I mean, I kind of gave Kurt Warner a bunch of crap too for being all religious and shit. Cam does that little half a second or three Mississippi prayer before every freaking play.
I mean, he doesn't, you know, the difference is that he doesn't sit there and talk. He doesn't sit there. He's not proselytizing constantly.
True.
You know?
That's true.
I mean, you can't get a word out of the guy now anymore edgewise because he's so utterly convinced that, like, the media is just, like, out to get him, you know?
At least he got his props for having a great game. I mean, everyone to a man the next day was like, that dude played really well. And if you were a Saints fan, you had to be scared shitless. And we were. I mean, again, if what's-his-name Funches makes a play on that ball three plays before the walk-off sack, or one play before the walk-off sack, whatever it was.
Yeah.
That little sideline vertical route where both our defenders sort of inexplicably moved away from Funchess right there at the end.
Yeah.
All Funchess has to do is reach out and catch that ball.
But look, then you can go one play before that and you can say whoever it was, Crawley or Lattimore,
right,
if they'd have broken on that ball just one split hair second earlier,
right,
it's an interception and the game's over.
That's true.
You know, because he was like, you know, just so close to having an interception right there. And then that would have been, and then everybody would have said, well, that's the Cam Newton that we all know.
That's true.
But you know what?
That's a good point.
But dude, I just want to say this, man. Look, we telegraphed safety blitz
right
on that play, man.
Yep.
You know, and you talk about a guy making up for, Von Bell is lined up right outside the line as a safety.
Clearly not in coverage.
He's not in coverage.
Clearly.
We're going to safety blitz.
Clearly.
Right? So they break with it's a missed assignment. You see it happen all the time. If you really look at offensive line play, you see this shit happen. The ball gets snapped and the guard comes in and blocks one guy, and the left tackle moves, or whatever, however it works out. The center and the guard wind up blocking the same dude.
Yeah.
And you look at that when there's a safety blitz, there is no way to fucking explain that other than the lineman made a mistake.
Of course.
He thought his assignment was to block the same guy, or the center thought that his assignment was to block that guy.
Yeah, it's just miscommunication.
It's just a miscommunication, and Von Bell went right through the hole. And here comes Cam Jordan. This is what I loved about that play, man, is that Von Bell, Cam Newton is so gigantic. Von Bell, I mean, safeties are usually pretty big cats, you know, they're bigger than cornerbacks.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, right? And he comes in and he just can't bring him down, you know?
Yeah, he's not that big of a safety.
He's just not that big, right, exactly. Yeah. And Cam Newton wraps himself around Von Bell. His arms are so long that he just bear hugs Von Bell in the middle of it.
Like octopusism.
And Cam Newton just falls like a tree.
Right.
And it's like game over.
That was good.
I was like, oh my God.
What I loved about that was there was so much tension in the room. And every living room was like that. On Facebook this week, there was the link that you posted or you shared, someone posted of the Carolina fan.
Yes.
Right. With the old whitewashed jeans or whatever and the shitty Charlotte, North Carolina living room.
Beige everywhere.
Yeah, it's all one monotone white beige.
Yeah.
And that kid's disappointment. Did you see the one that Derek Freeman shared of that dude
wearing the New Orleans guy? I fucking love that. Yeah.
Oh my God. So, that is such a great contrast.
That's the contrast.
It's a perfect contrast between Charlotte and New Orleans.
Exactly.
Period. Just put those side by side. The rest of your life. That's all you need to know about the difference between these two cities and these two fan bases.
That's right.
That's all you need to fucking
know. Dude, we're going to post both of them.
We're gonna put them side by side. We always talk about posting stuff on the website.
No, I can edit it, man.
We'll put it on our Facebook.
Yeah. Gotta do that. Yeah, I gotta figure out a way to do that.
That'll catch fire on Facebook.
I think it will. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna work on that. I'm gonna work on that.
Shit.
All right, folks. So look, man. All right. This is my thing. I honestly don't know that much about Minnesota Vikings. I know they got a white guy that's like supposedly a good wide receiver.
Yeah.
And they got Stephon Diggs, right?
Yeah.
I think I guess that's their other way. I don't know that much about him.
I heard it's cold up there.
Well, yeah, but it's an indoor stadium.
But man, when you step off that plane, man, it'll put a chill on you.
It'll put a chill on you.
Getting from the hotel, I hope that they can drive their vehicles into the lobby of the hotel. And then drive that same vehicle. I was in Minnesota once. It was like -8 degrees, and if you just stepped outside for 5 seconds, it fucked you up for the rest of the day.
I could see that, but I'm hoping that Sean Payton and all of the trainers have taken precautions for that and bought the right gear.
Yeah,
for
just our get players, some electric you know, heat.
Just don't even let them go outside that long. Make sure that the trip from the bus to the hotel entrance is only 3.5 seconds long, let's say.
I just wish they'd pull the plane up into the stadium.
Right into the stadium.
And just caught them motherfuckers up.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, man. It's going to be good, man. Minnesota, likely, I would say, I don't know if their defense is ranked number one. They are at or near the top of most defensive categories. They have an excellent defense.
Secondary and defensive line are what I heard.
I'm a bit worried because, you know, our... because Andrus Pete is out for the year with a broken femur.
Right. It's our 20th player placed on IR.
But I gotta tell you something that look, it might be our 20th player on IR, but that IR is filled with a lot of players that nobody has really heard of. So I'm okay with that part.
Like four tight ends that no one's ever heard of.
Like four tight ends that nobody's ever heard
of again.
And look, man, we got Hooman back, right?
That's right.
And Josh Hill has been playing great, right?
Dude, Josh Hill.
Nobody misses Kobe Fleener.
What's your boy's line? What's his first name?
Oh, I don't even know what line.
See, I think Hill and Lyon should have a New Orleans cop buddy show.
I don't think that I'm ever going to know a fullback's first name ever again.
Lyon and Hill and Lyon, something.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want
to
know.
Those two dudes have to have some sort of buddy film.
Okay, so we've gotten great play out of Lyon. Like, we've talked about this, that not every team in the NFL anymore even has a fullback. Sean Payton has always maintained a fullback. We always have some guy in there. And routinely, in pressure situations, we call up the full. We've had a rotating door of fullbacks.
Right,
and we dial them up, you know, like in very special situations. Like it'll be like, you know, second and goal, right? On the five.
I would dial up the fucking fullback right now. I would put all the money in my bank account right now on this wager that Drew Brees has thrown more receptions to different fullbacks than any other active quarterback.
Yeah, I think that that's a bet that you can take to the bank.
Because he's got like three random ones a year.
Yeah,
I know. And you're like, who's that dude? I don't know. He just scored a touchdown.
Well,
and you never hear from him again.
And to your thing about next man up, and in that position, we had Kuhn, right?
Right.
And who's like, you know, this all pro fullback, man, you know, like is like, I mean, he's. Yeah, he's highly thought of as fullbacks go, whatever that means in today's right. NFL. And but you know, he was slated to come off of IR. I don't know what happened. He did for like 1 week, and then he went back on. You know, so he wasn't able to get over his injury. But look, I just want to say this: getting back to Andrus Pete, Pete's out for the year. But you know, you couldn't be in a better situation than the Saints are, having that happen, barring any other injuries that might occur. In Senio Calamete coming in.
Right.
Because Calamete has been a rotational starting player for the Saints for years now. He's only second string in name only.
Right.
He's one of these players that they flex in and out of the lineup more than you know. And the other great thing is like having Hooman back, because he's a great blocking tight end. And so we got the fullback, we got Calamete and Hooman. And I think that we can make do. Pete's been playing good. He loves that left guard position. I think that's where his natural talents are. And he's finally graduated, I think, out of his kind of like rookie phase.
Sure.
He was making a lot of mistakes. But look, you can't blame him for that, because they were moving him around like fucking like pieces on a fucking chessboard, for crying out loud, for 3 years.
But that moving him around, though, that philosophy of moving guys around is what saved our bacon this year.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I agree, man. You know, and then the other thing is that we've gotten great play out of rookie linemen. Every now and again, he gives up something, but Ramczyk, you know, is like slotted in like a veteran at this point. Not enough good stuff has been said about that guy far, man. But I mean, you think about how much mental facility it takes to come in from college, you know, on a team and realizing, you know, I don't know what, 7, 8, 9 weeks into the season that you've got a chance to run for the playoffs. And certainly somebody that young could, you know, get a case of the jitters or whatnot and really fall apart. And frankly, we saw that. I don't know if you remember this or not, but like the first time Teron Armstead got called up into a game, which I think was against the Rams. Nobody remembers this anymore.
Right,
it was
right.
A few years ago. And everybody's like, oh, man.
Oh, he got crushed.
We were like, Teron Armstead's never going to make it in the NFL. This guy sucks, man.
Yeah.
Because he got murdered, man. Because he just, and I mean, like, that happens in the NFL. And he recovered quickly. And then, you know, a year and a half, 2 years later, everybody's like, this guy's easily one of the best left tackles in the NFL. And so we got Armstead back. So my point is this, Joel, that, I mean, as we've had people go on IR, we've also had a lot of people who've been having trouble throughout the season get better. And that's been helping out a lot. And then the other thing is that we've had people step up to the plate, man. Ken Crawley is like the perfect example of that, for crying out loud. On defense, you know, Crawley was a guy who had maybe a big crushed question mark about him. And like Crawley in the last two games has really come through. He's really come through. He's
been consistent all season.
And look, let me just say this too, that, you know, AJ Klein was playing great for us, right? Klein's on injured reserve, right? Insert Manti Te'o. And Te'o has been playing great. Lights out.
Smart
football.
Smart guy.
Smart fucking like the guy is where the ball is.
Exactly.
Every time.
It's like he's a hyper efficient player.
He knows where
the fast. He's just is where he needs to be.
He's where he needs to be, man. He knows where the play is going.
It's like he plays in a super measured kind of way.
I'm so glad that we got him. Yeah. I don't think San Diego ever. Well, look, I mean, not to diss out San Diego, he was injured.
Right.
You know, he had a significant injury, and then his career just didn't take off.
Right.
And he didn't slot into whatever system they were having. Fine. We'll take him.
Exactly.
Because Manti Te'o's played great for us. Trying to think of some other people. I mean, the obvious standouts are all obvious.
We got our dude from the Moneyball.
We got Robertson, from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Who's our, you know, I mean, Robertson is the attitude player that you need. Like, Robertson hits you and it hurts, man.
That's right.
It just hurts.
That's right.
That's all there is to it, you know? And I would say that a little bit about Von Bell, because that's the next man up. Everybody's like, Von Bell, Kenny Vaccaro's out. You're the Vaccaro now. And, you know, Bell has gotten burned, you know, a few times. You know, I mean, there's no doubt about it. But a lot of that gets made up, you know, when you have a Marshawn Lattimore out there. You know what I mean? And so, you know, what the hell, man? I feel good about our prospects again.
I like that we're playing indoors.
I like the idea of, I don't know what their offensive line is like. I have no idea. I know this, that they like us, have a two running back system that they run. They got a guy named McKinnon, and I forget who the other guy is. Their wide receivers are reportedly really good. So, to me, the Saints have been very good at stuffing up the run, except for a few games that were exceptions.
Right.
There, against Atlanta was one. You know, but we've always had trouble with Devonta Freeman. He plays well against us.
Right.
But the Saints have done a good job plugging up the run in the middle, as long as Onyemata is in the game. And I think that that's going to be the key. The key is going to be to pressure the quarterback on the edges. That's what we need to do.
Yep.
And we need to, and if we can get, if we're at five sacks in that game, because, you know, I mean, to me, if you get to 4 and 5 sacks, that means that there's a shit ton of hurries and there's a shit ton of the pocket closing down.
Right.
You know, and what you want to do with a guy like Case Keenum is you want to pull out all the reasons why Case Keenum was a third-string quarterback for
Those
years.
And then
that's what you want to do.
Well, in Minnesota might do that preemptively and just make him go captain checkdown. And if that's the case, we've got to really tackle well. You know, you can't let those little 2-yard passes
turn into like 13-yard.
So those linebackers have really got to step up and tackle.
That's right. Exactly. Well, I feel confident about that, man.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And then if he does step back in the pocket and look to throw downfield, we got to put him on his ass, like you're saying.
Yeah, we just got to put him on his ass.
At least hurry him. We've got to look. If you're going to win, look, you got to go balls out in the playoffs, man. And if the chink in their armor is a former third-string quarterback, man, you've got to make him fucking beat you. And you've got to get after this motherfucker see what he's made of.
I agree.
And if he steps up and he handles the pressure and he stays upright in the pocket and delivers it downfield, well, I can live with that.
Yeah.
But if we don't put pressure on him, I can't live with that.
No.
You got to test this dude's mettle.
Yeah, you got to
see what he's got.
That's right. You
know? And then on offense, I think we got to go for big plays. I think we got to go for some fourth downs. I think we got to, you know, you got to go all in, man. And then, of course, with turnovers, I mean, that's, you know, boring, but you can't turn the ball over more than they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I like us being super aggressive in this game on offense.
Well, look, here's the thing is that, you know, our pocket protection is going to be tested in this game. It just is.
Yeah.
There's no getting around that.
That's right.
You know?
It really is.
And Drew Brees is going to have to do, we're going to have to do a lot of quick release stuff.
That's
right. And here's the thing. I don't know if their weakness on defense is their secondary. And if it is, let's shred the fuck out.
Their secondary is really good.
Well, then we got to challenge them over the middle, I think, is what we got to do.
Got to run the ball.
And we got to run the ball.
I think we got to run the ball.
We got to run the ball, and we got to challenge them over the middle. I don't care how we do it, but we got to get the offense going. And I'm like, you know.
Because, I mean, from what I've heard is their defensive pass rush and their secondary are their strong points.
I'll take a 20. I'll take 21. 21-13, Saints.
I think it'll be a little more high scoring.
Yeah.
Yeah. 31-24
Saints. Again, 31 points is the magic number, man.
Our special teams have been playing
30 points is the magic number.
Man, I don't like Tommy Lee back there returning punts.
He's so small, man.
He's killing me.
Yeah.
Dude's killing me.
He worries me a little bit.
I just go ahead and put Kamara back there every time now.
God, Kamara's got the vision.
It's potentially
man.
The last game of your season. Just put him back there at least half the time.
Kamara is easily the best rookie running back that I've seen. Since when?
In the history of the universe.
I don't think that I've ever seen a rookie running back come in. Maybe Spencer would disagree because he was talking about somebody.
Emmitt Smith.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, that dude for Houston.
The guy for Houston. Is it Houston or was it, or is it the Rams? Anyway, here's my point. I don't think that I've seen a high.
No, it's the Cardinals.
Yes, it was the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Right. I can't recall. I'd have to look at that guy's season.
Yeah.
As a rookie, but somebody who's had a hybrid season like Alvin Kamara has had in his first year, and the poise. In depth, not to use cliched terms that sportscasters use all the time, but he just seems to have a patience and an ability, you know. I mean, look, Reggie Bush admitted it.
Yeah.
He was like, Alvin Kamara is so much more advanced as a rookie than I was.
He's more advanced as an eighth-year player than he was.
He just is. He just is.
I mean, I'm not going to pot. No, sorries. He just is. He's got the vision. He's got more physicality than Bush did. He's got better vision. He knows how to hit a hole.
And
he's got all the intangibles.
And
man.
Ingram has had his best season that he's ever had.
We need Ingram to have a big, because we need to be able to rush in between the tackles against Minnesota.
That's right.
I think Ingram's I did say that we have to be aggressive on occasion. I think we need to go for big plays, but I'm gonna be disappointed if we don't run the ball 30 times.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like we need to run the ball early. Now,
but look, like any game, we got to throw to Michael Thomas, man.
Oh fuck yeah, dude! What does Wheeler say?
Yeah, what did he say? I forget. Dude, he's like,
he's so funny, man.
I know.
He'll say something that is not going to translate as being.
It was like time for Michael Thomas time or something like that.
It's always a good time for Michael.
It's always a good time for Michael Thomas.
It's always a good
time for Michael Thomas. Exactly, and it is.
It is.
Apparently, it is. It's always a good time for Michael Thomas. Yeah. So here's my thing. I'll say this, man. I consider this. Well, look, and there is a potential for Case Keenum to melt down completely.
Sure.
All right. I want to put that out there because Case Keenum has never played in a playoff game. Okay. And I say this about players all the time, right? It's like, even Colin Kaepernick, like the bad years that Colin Kaepernick had.
Right.
Look, there was a reason why Colin Kaepernick was not drafted as highly as other players, you know? And when times get tough, that's when you find out what that reason is.
Yeah.
So to me, Case Keenum could fall apart.
He could.
But if Case Keenum plays.
We got to give him the chance to fall apart.
If he plays a decent game, right, even with us getting after him, if he plays well and holds up, I'm just declaring that this is going to be the toughest game that the Saints face. And if we come out on top, we're winning the Super Bowl.
I'm with you on that.
I don't think anybody can beat us after that.
I don't like us going to Philly in the cold, man. I just don't. I think that'd be a tough. I mean, I know that quarterback is suspect, but I don't like going up there in below 20 degree weather.
I don't know what the temperature is right now.
Yeah.
I don't see Atlanta losing that game. I just think Atlanta's better right now.
Yeah, they got a really fast, good defense.
I mean, their defense has been playing well, right?
Yeah.
They've been playing well. They got housed.
Well, they got a lot of speed. They got a lot of speed. You know? on.
I mean, they've played well for a couple of games.
We match up well with them.
Right. You know, we tore them apart in that last game. But, you know, I mean, to me, I just think Philly, you know, I can't see them winning with Nick Foles, you know? Right. I just don't think that he's a guy. And what Philly has relied on mostly this season is the opposite of Minnesota. You know, they have the high-powered offense. They're like the number one offense in the NFL. That's their bag. You know, they look a little bit like the greatest show on turf from early 2000s. That's what they look like to me, you know? And now they have a quarterback who can't make that offense go.
That's right.
So then they have to do what? They have to rely on Jay Ajayi to be a monster out of the backfield. And they got to up their, they have to up the number of runs from like whatever, 30 to 40 a game, so that Nick Foles doesn't have to be the guy in order to win. Because you can't ask him to make the same plays that Carson Wentz does. You know?
No, they're going
to. Or they are going to ask him to do that. No, I think and then Atlanta's going to eat him alive.
I think they're going to captain check down that dude way more than they would Case Keenum. I think they're not going to let that guy throw anything. It's going to be Sunday. Are they playing Saturday? Right now, high of 44 and some rain, low of 15.
That's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
No, it's not.
Next Saturday, which would be a day before we played in Philadelphia, if it came to that, it's a high of 44 that day. Anything above 40, I'd be happy with.
Look, I at this point, I want Atlanta at home.
Me too. Absolutely.
I just want that.
That's epic.
It's epic.
It's epic.
Like, what story gets bigger than that?
This city will go fucking bananas.
You have one of the biggest.
Half the people in this town don't even know where Philadelphia is, bruh.
Let me tell you something. If people have made fun of the Saints-Atlanta rivalry, and they have, from other places where they say football is the heart, and you know, where they think that it's the heartland of football, and I guess they're right, you know, Ravens, Steelers, Cowboys, Redskins. Cowboys team from DC, you know, like what's another one? Minnesota, Green Bay, Green Bay, Chicago.
Right.
Right. I mean, we can go on and on, right?
Yeah,
those are the divisions.
Yeah.
Where those, you know, it's the NFC East.
That's right.
Right.
And then it's
the AFC North.
And the NFC North.
And the NFC North.
Those three divisions.
Those three divisions are where it all happens.
Every single matchup is a big rivalry.
Every single matchup is a gigantic fucking rivalry.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. And we've been tooting this horn of the Atlanta-New Orleans thing, and I can tell
all of you
out there, that for people in New Orleans, it looms in their minds much larger than any of those rivalries do. I mean, even if people project that they're bigger than this rivalry, and it's bigger than the people in Atlanta, it's a much bigger rivalry.
It's
just much for people.
More one-sided.
It's much more one-sided. But here's the thing: an NFC championship game with that rivalry as the game is going to launch that rivalry into the annals of fucking sports mythology to a point where it's going to be undeniable. It's going to be billed because you need a big moment like that, right? A big stage. And then people are going to be like, this is one of the biggest rivalries in sports.
Our Mercedes Dome.
They never say that.
Mercedes Dome.
You kidding me?
Why you got to steal our name, bro?
Your fucking roof doesn't even work. The roof doesn't work.
Your fans don't even make noise, dog.
The fans don't even make noise. I mean, anybody can buy a ticket to an Atlanta game whenever they're playing.
Whenever they want. They can just
right.
walk up.
Right, exactly. One of the most historically great baseball teams of all time. Going to the playoffs a few years ago, couldn't give tickets away in Atlanta, man, for crying out loud. Even when the Atlanta Hawks were playing well,
I kind of don't understand why New Orleanians hate those people so much.
Because you hate a team where the fans are that freaking mealy.
And there is this thing about being in the South. It's like they're the new South and all this bullshit.
There's a case to be made, Joel, that like look, who are the second best fan base in the NFC South? It's Tampa. It is.
Oh, by definitely. They're
by
not great.
Far.
They're not great.
They're not great.
They're the best in Florida.
But at least they got the fucking cannons.
They're the best in Florida.
They got the pirate ship and the cannons.
That's right.
You know? I mean, that's something.
They're a little bit like Chargers fans. The Bucks.
I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not you bad.
Know? Yeah, that's not bad.
They got the colors. You know?
But it's Atlanta, you know, what can I say? It goes back to the Steve Barkowski era and whatnot, you know, I mean, maybe it's always loomed larger in the heads of New Orleanians, whatever, but I can tell you that there is a hardcore fan base in Atlanta. It's just not enough to fill up stadiums.
Nope.
That's all there is to it. And anyway, I'm begging for that rivalry to happen in the NFC Championship
And this town
game.
Will go...
And
this,
it's going to go crazy. It's going to go crazy.
I'm scared for this town if that happens. I mean, it's going to be nuts. It's going to be fun.
Can you imagine? Like, I feel bad almost.
In the middle of carnival season, too.
I feel great for Michael Cohen, Fuzz.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for him because I don't want anything bad.
I don't want him to have a stroke out.
Exactly. I don't want anybody to get, like, so manic that something bad happens.
And Fuzz what?
Like, that shit is going to be, like, people will be on fire.
Aaron, too.
You have no idea how big that would be.
Meatball will be able to handle it.
This is an...
I think Meatball secretly likes the Giants or some shit.
There's an earth-shattering possibility that could be the outcome of these playoffs this
That's
weekend.
Right.
That if you're a sports fan in New Orleans, is the likes of which you've never seen
before.
And it's like, you know, anyway, NFL...
The Super Bowl is the week before Mardi Gras, right?
And the Super Bowl is the week before Mardi Gras. And we were just talking about like this brew of craziness that will happen in the city if the Saints are able to get back to the big dance is going to be nuts, man.
Speaking of dances, man, did you see they made a rap song about Sean Payton's little locker room jig?
I had heard about that, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's
man.
Killer.
All right. Well, we're going to have to put that. We're going to have to post that. So we got to do the side-by-side.
Got to do
We got to post that. Right, exactly. That's another thing that happens
That'll
in
go
New
viral,
Orleans. Listen, I don't know if this happens in your town, San Francisco, looking at you, because I know it doesn't. I don't know if it happens in Minnesota. I'm guessing not. I don't know if it happens in, I don't know where else, man, because there's a lot of teams that hardly ever make the playoffs, man. But, you know, I don't know where else it happens. But here's the thing. When the Saints get on a run.
We get new songs.
We get new songs.
We just
come
get new
out.
Songs.
Just a bunch of songs get made.
New songs.
And they get played.
And it's not like the Chicago Bears shuffle bullshit from the 80s.
No, it's not
Icky like
shuffle
music.
Bullshit. Right, yeah, exactly. We have, there's a whole CD that needs to be updated that could be a 2-CD volume
That's right.
of Saints songs that have been made throughout the year.
That's right.
For crying out loud. You know, I mean,
just in the Drew Brees, Sean Payton era.
We're the only city that has that many songs about
that
football team.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Man. That many songs and fullbacks.
Yeah. We got a huge number of fullbacks and a huge number of songs. What we need is a huge song featuring a fullback.
That's right.
In the song.
Exactly.
There we go.
Dude.
Done.
Let's make that happen.
That's a mic drop right there.
That's
right.
All right, y'all.
All right, man. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. What the fuck is going on with the Pelicans? We don't know.
We don't
talk
care.
About that. We don't care. Those motherfuckers, man, have got to pull their shit together.
I really don't care. We got Mardi Gras. We got the Saints, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right? It's all football. It's all Mardi Gras,
it's
right?
It's carnival.
Man. That's it. Exactly. Carnival.
Carnival.
All right, y'all. We'll catch you on the flip side. Look, we pulled our schedule together. I want to let everybody know out there. Amsterdam Phillip, if you're listening, here's the thing. Mostly on Tuesdays, we're definitely going to be doing Tuesdays this month.
Between now and Carnival.
Yeah. And let me do a little shout. I'll do a little plug for stuff. Like my other band, Green Demons, is going to be playing this Saturday at the Portside Lounge in Central City.
Yeah.
Right, so I got a gig with that. That band's been coming together really nice, man. Rock and roll. Fine rock and roll.
Fucking right.
Done New Orleans style. And then we're going to be, Egg Yolk Jubilee is going to be out with Crew de Vue, which is the final Saturday of the month. And then the following Saturday, we're going to be with the Crew of T-Rex. Then we're going to be on the Monday, Crew of 2.2. We're going to be in our marching band format with those guys. And also coming up the Friday before Crew de Vue, last weekend of January, is the what's called the Lesseps Memorial. That's what we refer to it as, which happens at Vaughn's and also at BJ's simultaneously. That is a lot of fucking fun. And we march one block, and then we morph into the rock and roll Egg Yolk Jubilee. Nice. And then we get in there, and we'll rock your brains out. And that's it. That's what's going on with me and with Carnival. And look for us out on the parade route.
That's right.
And so on Tuesday nights, we're going to do our best to drop the episodes and put them in there. There is a couple of Wednesdays coming up where we might do other episodes as well. And we're going to do a lot of teasing about Mardi Gras events that are coming up as well and get some great guests on here. So tune in, folks. It's going to be good. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel Stales from New Orleans. Joel, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I'm just going to pimp the podcast, man. We're going to have really good Carnival guests on. We want to do a slice of life of Carnival that people that don't live in New Orleans maybe don't, you know, get a taste. They just think about Rex or Zulu or whatever, the big parades. And we want to get some people in here that do the walking parades, some folks from the dancing squads like the Camel Toe Steppers or the Pussyfooters. We want to get a marching band director. Talk to those folks about how many parades he sends his kids out to throughout the season.
Try and get
a full slice of life of what happens in Carnival in New Orleans over the 4 or 5 weeks.
And look, folks, I'm just going to reiterate this one last thing. Go to the ACLU website.
That's right.
Go to the and sign a petition against the Stacey Head, Mitch Landrieu camera surveillance ordinance, which they're ostensibly going to be voting on January 25th. They're trying to slide it in to Carnival time. Again, don't let them keep the pressure up. We got to get this thing kicked to the curb. And go to the Music and Culture Coalition, a.k.a. MACNO website.
That's right.
And take their action steps and call your city council people and let them know that we want to kick this thing to the curb. We don't want to hear about it anymore. When the new council comes in, we want this thing to be dead in the water and never to move forward, never to be heard from again. And so that's the parting words that I have for this episode.
Jared Brosky, city council person from District D, our district. Jeff, your district, my district.
Yo.
Dude, we know you like hanging out at the bars, man. You don't want them cameras.
Look, I just want to say this. If you're a politician...
The cameras capture everyone.
If you're a politician who happens to hang out at bars or possibly at strip clubs or possibly maybe every now and again likes to, you know, bust one up, then don't vote for this shit, man, because like when some jackass from Jeff Sessions Justice Department is assigned to investigate your ass, then you know, our own NOPD is going to be obliged to share this footage of where you're hanging out, and guess what's going to happen? And you know how it goes down. If they find out anything
about you
along the way, guess you know what Jeff Sessions says about weed. And so you know how it is. You know you're going to be surveilled as well. Your life is going to be put on these cameras as well.
Right.
So, you know, get with the program, because don't live in a bubble where you think that this doesn't affect you.
That's right.
For crying out loud, because your butt's going to be on the line as well, just like everybody else out there. But more importantly, it's going to impact musicians and culture bearers in the city of New Orleans in a way that their livelihoods are going to be threatened to a degree that's even worse than the noise ordinance a couple of years ago.
That's right. So take heed, we got to preserve our culture.
That's right. Exactly. You know, it's like Derek Freeman said, you know, like New Orleans is important to this country. We need to keep New Orleans, New Orleans.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what we need to do.
Period.
So this is a way to do it. So go to those websites, visit those people, join up, donate to MACNO, and let's get this thing killed. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel Stales from New Orleans, episode 86, part 2. Tune in next time. We'll see you then.
Who that baby?